Hey guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. Hopefully by now you know what we do. People who are doing amazing things, they've got stories to tell. They come in and share them with us. They're using their voice for good. And we have one of those folks in the studio today. I don't know, actor, musician, voice of video games, you know, super villain in some of this, like a little bit of everything. Ben Barnes joins us. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate you coming in. Does it feel weird hearing all of those things describing you?
I suppose, yeah. I never really considered myself to be any kind of multi-hyphenate. I mean, starting out in my career, I never thought I would do even one of those things. So I think they all gradually came as a surprise to me. And the real task has been kind of getting used to the fact that these are the things that I've chosen to do with my life, and that people are allowing me to
and doing them well.
Allowing me to do.
Can I tell you, this is kind of a tangent and it's going to sound like a really stupid statement.
Oh, I can't wait.
But no, it's amazing. When I first heard Idris Elba speak just regularly and realized his accent, I was that much more impressed by how folks with accents to us can play so many diverse roles, and there's no hint of it.
Did you first see him like on?
So I saw him acting.
Yeah,
I don't know, was it The Wire or something like that, where he was just. And then when I heard him talking, and he, what was the show he did where he was a investigator?
Luther. He's just a different man. Yeah.
I was like, huh. The accent thing. You've played a lot of different roles with a lot of different accents. Is that even hard to do?
It's interesting. Initially, I had a bit of imposter syndrome about it, because the first few roles that I got cast in, especially the sort of first big role that I got, was in the Narnia franchise movies. And I did a sort of Spanish / Italian / slightly made up Mediterranean accent in that film, and I thought, oh well, they've only cast me because I have this facility with doing voices and doing accents. Am I a good actor, or can I just do silly voices? Because the next movie I did, I played a Russian character, and then I was doing all these different accents, and I felt like I was just sort of an accent, like an impressionist almost, rather than the proper actor. And it took me a long time to kind of, it took me a good few roles of playing Brits and Americans in a role before I kind of let go of that feeling. But yeah, I had a good run of about 10 years where I only played Americans. I'd moved to the States and I only played Americans. And so then actually it was very weird for me when I went back to the UK and I did a show on the BBC.
Right.
And I did.
Like, how do I do this accent?
Yeah, I did a British accent, and I sort of couldn't quite figure out how to do it, because I couldn't figure out how to sit comfortably in my own voice and be someone else. It kind of made me feel like hot in the neck a little bit, like I wasn't, it was too real.
Right. It's like, this is actually me.
Yeah, exactly.
And
sometimes it's useful
that
to have something to hang your hat on, as it were, like an accent or a walk or a coat, something that you can start with as a character. And an accent for me very quickly became that thing. So then when it was taken away, I didn't really know where to start.
I think a lot of Americans, because our accents generally suck, you know, so I think when we hear people, and we're from Philly, so Philly has all kinds of things. And when you hear the accents, you're like, huh, because they're cool to us. But then for you to be able to do all of these different ones, and I just kind of sit back.
But your accents are cool to us, something exotic, something different, you know.
Okay, Philly. So we travel around, they're like, that Philly accent's awesome.
Yeah, to us it is.
I appreciate that. I'm feeling better about myself. Take us back a little bit, because we know about a lot of the things that you've done now, and Chronicles of Narnia and Westworld and all of these various things.
Yeah.
But going back, it was music that initially is what you wanted to do? Like, what were the early years?
I would say the first kind of foray into doing anything entertainment connected, I was probably a teenager, and I was singing in choirs and playing. I played the drums with my school, like, jazz band. And I just loved being in the music department of my school. It was like my happy place. And so I was trying to think of any way to kind of connect my life to music. Mm-hmm. And then somebody came to my school from this youth theater company, which was this amazing national youth theater, music theater company, and saw, I think, a concert of ours or a play that we'd done at the school, and asked me if I wanted to audition for this company. And that's where I still have most of my best friends that I've had in my life. Okay. Are from that period of my life. And I just kind of like caught this bug of wanting to kind of pursue this thing. And but initially, you're right, initially I was actually signed to a music management company, 90 Management, who created the Spice Girls. That okay. kind of that it was a big company, and I was recording jazz, a sort of jazz record with this company, but it sort of fell apart weeks after it begun, really. And I was very disillusioned with that part of things. And then I got a job doing a play, and then I got a job in a movie, mm-hmm. obviously playing a Russian or an Italian or doing some kind of silly accent that was not my own, and I probably wasn't pulling it off particularly accurately, but
it worked out.
The music was really the first love, but it felt like a kind of untouchable industry to me. I just had no idea how it worked. Whereas with acting, I was like, well, you audition for a role and you either get it or you don't. It felt very clear and honest in some ways. But now that I've kind of been able 20 years later to kind of dip my toe in these musical waters, I realize it's actually the other way around. The music is
okay.
is a really kind of supportive industry. Like, people tend to do favors for each other and play on each other's songs and help push each other, because it is such a hard industry to get a foothold in. Mm-hmm. That I've found that almost everyone I've met in the industry is really celebrating that's what they're doing with their lives.
And that wasn't the early experience for you getting into. You knew you wanted to do entertainment, or you just kind of fell into that too? Because you weren't growing up.
I'd been doing these plays with music in my teens, and I thought, you know, telling stories, acting, singing, doing music, it all felt like one mode of entertainment and one mode of storytelling to me. So I never really separated them. I think over the course of my career, I've also played a lot of musicians in movies. I did a film called Jackie and Ryan in Utah, where I played like a train hopping street busker. Mm-hmm. One of my early movies was called Killing Bono. It was a movie about a guy who in real life went to school with the kids from U2, but he was in a different rock band, and they were terrible.
Right.
And then years later, he wrote a very funny book about his experiences, and I played that guy.
Okay.
This sort of very grizzly, disillusioned, angry man who was in the world's worst band. So I've played a bunch of musicians, I've sung on a lot of soundtracks, and I've kind of been able to infuse my acting career with music. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't until my late 30s that I really made any categorical, honest attempt to release my own music and to kind of try and put that out into the world and see if that was something that would be rewarding.
It's kind of cool how all of this, and listening to you tell the story, these things just kind of fell into place. I was doing some acting, I tried the music, I didn't really like the direction of the industry. So then I get cast in some of the biggest films with cult following of all time. And after I do for a while, this is my summary.
Let's not like rose tint everything. I think the music thing just purely, I was dropped after several weeks. It just did not work. It was the same week that the very first Pop Idol, which eventually became American Idol, or whatever. Yeah. It was the very first one of those. So that ages me. But it was, they decided that Jazz Week was going to be great on this show, and the songs I've been recording were just given over to these contestants on this show, and we were done. So they weren't my songs, they were covers, so they're free reign for anybody. But it was certainly a very kind of it was certainly a very sort of bleak and direct look into the sort of vortex of what how cold the industry could be. And look, I over the last 20 years, there are literally thousands of acting jobs that I've gone in and done the dance in front of people and done the scenes, and you're just given a very cold no and no reason why. So I think along the way, there's definitely been...
Those aren't in your bio.
Yeah, good point. That's a very good point.
Forget about that. Nobody cares about the stuff you didn't get. Let's list all of the things that you did.
Let's celebrate the things that went right.
One after the other. That's the story. Yeah. As we tell it, I did this one, and then I did this one, and then I...
That's true, but I do think it is important to acknowledge the other side of it because, you know...
It's work.
There are no... You know, there's no kind of knowing what it feels like to celebrate a win if you don't know what a loss feels like. And so I think it part of the point of me kind of writing my own music, and you know, I've been on tour, you know, with an album and releasing stuff, and part of the point of that is to share some stories from my own aspect, to pen my own script, and to sort of share that it's not always rainbows and butterflies, no matter what the bio looks like. So I think that's like a big part of it, because nobody really feels like that all the time, you know. Right.
Did that in reading information and what have you, and the successes that we talked about, I've read somewhere that one of the challenges and one of the things I guess that drove you back to music and wanting to do the music is your voice. And you're kind of acting out, it's somebody else's voice, and even if you're really good at it, having a chance to kind of share your voice and your story, was that one of the things that inspired
you? Yeah, absolutely. And I think probably as you get older, as a person, you start to think about, for me anyway, I think it was honestly the scare was when the pandemic hit, like it was for, I think, for a lot of people in different ways, to try new things. And it made us, it released us from all the comforts that we had in our life and all the things we had to look forward to in the short term. And I definitely projected forward to, you know, an 80-year-old version of myself looking back on my life thinking, you really never found the courage to do music? Okay. Wow, I'm disappointed in you. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I thought from that perspective, what am I waiting for? And I think through my acting as well, even though I was playing, you know, villains in fantasy shows, you know, swishing my cloak around, I was still looking for ways to sew pieces of myself and my ideologies into these characters, and going to the showrunners and saying, what if I said this line like this? And I realized what I'm trying to do is like garner some control and try to tell stories in my way, when actually it's not my story, this one. Right. So And really the only solution to that is to start with a blank piece of paper and tell your own
story.
And that's kind of scary sometimes, especially for actors who, I think for a lot of us, it's very comfortable to hide behind someone else's words, someone else's costume, someone else's, you know, way in the world. And that's a pretty comfortable place for most of us actors. I think it's not me. Right.
It's not me. We've had a couple, was it Jay Ellis, I think? We've had several people on who have talked about that scenario, and they were, I guess, so good at the role, or people associated them with the role. Like, we've had people who were getting slapped in airports, you know, or people who were getting kind of yelled at for things that their character did.
Yes.
And that kind of speaks to what you're talking about. Like, that wasn't me.
Well, I know.
I was acting.
And also, the other thing that no one ever really gets into is, like, actors watch stuff too. And so when I watch TV shows, if I haven't met someone, if I turn up to, you know, some kind of like, you know, acting event or whatever, and I see people, I associate them with the characters that I've watched them play and I've loved them as. And if they've been heroes, I kind of am slightly in awe. And if they're kind of often playing like twisted or, you know, Machiavellian characters, I kind of have an element of distrust. Like, we're all susceptible to that same kind of judgment. And I think recently for me, I've probably played 5 or 6 years worth of, you know, villains and psychos and liars. And I was like, oh, wow, it's really important for me to tell my, like, agenting team, I need to play a guy that you're rooting for next, because that's important to me in life, to like, for that not to necessarily be the whole legacy. It's fun. It's fun to be the bad guy, and it's fun to like play the villain and find mischief and darkness in stuff. As an actor, that's a really fun task, but it, you know, I did start, as I said, you know, you're thinking about looking back at it all, and you want some balance in that as well, I think.
Yeah. Don't only get slapped in airports.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah. Like once every 3 times.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough. You get, like, I love your music. I love your acting. And then
but
a slap.
But I saw this.
Right. Right. We go through there.
Yeah.
It is these villains, these characters, the darkness playing the role, that seems to be almost the exact opposite of what you're expressing with your music.
Yes.
You know, and so tell us about, you've done the acting, you'll continue to do the acting.
Yes, sir.
Now kind of doing the music. This is your, you've done music before, but this is your first album.
Mm-hmm.
It's your first big tour.
Yes, yeah.
So what's that been like so far, and kind of inspired that whole journey?
Yeah, it's been wonderful. I've been surrounded by incredible musicians who I'm just completely in awe of. I had the support of actually two of the band members of Maroon 5 played on the record, and one of them produced the record, and I wrote one song with the both of them as well. And I, so I felt this kind of level of support with it all. You know, it's like doing a film where you know the director has made a great movie before. Mm-hmm. You feel this kind of, you feel like someone's got your back in it. Yeah. And with it, and if they're kind of bopping their heads along to tracks when you're finished, you're like, oh, it must be okay, you know. And so I felt like the confidence to be able to kind of like take it on the road. And of course, like, you know, of course you get nervous when you're standing in front of 1,000, 2,000 people. And
you still do?
Yeah, because it's kind of new territory for me to like sing songs that I wrote in my living room or while I was away on set in, you know, in an apartment in Hungary, you know, after the end of a long day of villainy, I would, you know, come try and shake it out
and write
a song about something else. And then to be singing them for people, and for people to be finding their own stories in words that you wrote about yourself or people that you care about is such a fascinating thing to me. Mm-hmm. And you never question it as a music lover. You know, when I listen to songs by great artists, you know when I hear Prince sing about "I just want to give you my extra time and my kiss," like I'm not thinking, "I wonder who he wrote that about." I'm thinking, well, "Who do I want to give my extra time to?" Mm. Yeah. So I think it's like it's sort of obvious if you put it through that lens, but when you're doing it, it kind of feels vulnerable because you think, oh, everyone's going to read into all my stories and see who I really am or whatever. But that's not how music really works.
That actually seems like, for somebody who can't act or sing, I'm just kind of interpreting this through your eyes. That seems like that would be much harder, because you can separate yourself from the statements, positive or negative, if you're playing a role. Mm-hmm. But this is you.
Yes.
You know, so everything, the love, I'd imagine, has to feel better. If there's been any critique, I wonder if that is kind of reflection also, because it's like, huh, this really is me.
Yeah, I think the really interesting thing about music is though that it tends to only, the way that it works in terms of the way that we share music, it tends to find people that gravitate towards it. You know, okay. You take a chance on a movie in the cinema, in the movie theater, or you take a chance on a movie on Netflix or Amazon, and if you don't love it at the end, you turn it off and you go, I didn't love that movie, did you? Nah, me neither, and you go to bed. Whereas with music, if you're not into it after 30 seconds, you'll change to something else. So it really does only find people that like it, and you're certainly not going to go buy a ticket for a show for something that you don't
spend good money to come
a
criticize
little bit into
this.
So it's kind of curious from that perspective that it's for the people it's for already, but you're right in terms of the reward. You have people, you get this a little bit with theater, I think, with plays, although it's probably been 15 years since I've done a play, but the immediacy of the reaction. If you say something on screen that people, if you say something on stage that people connect with, they will make faces and a noise, and you know that they're understanding you. If they like a song, they'll scream at the end of it. You know what I mean? It's so immediate. Whereas when you're on a set, you know, you're toiling away for months in the middle of nowhere usually, and then a year later it comes out and people watch it in their own homes, and sometimes people come up to you and tell you what they thought about it, but generally they just say, oh, I saw you in this. So it is interesting that it is, you're right, it not only is it incredibly rewarding for people to validate something that you've made yourself about your own life, but also the immediacy of the reaction is validating too.
On tour, you're here, you're heading back to Europe to kind of do that. What are you hoping people get from, because Where the Light Gets In has all kinds of meaning in the title. My producer was printing out the album cover and explaining all, I know you can't see it in color right now, but there's even meaning to the album cover.
Yeah.
What do you hope people get out of this album and this tour?
I mean, I think I found myself writing songs about feeling kind of lovable for who you are and who you've become through whatever it is that you've been through. I think I like to think of myself as a very like hopeful person. Mm-hmm. And so I find that a lot of my songs feel like they're about hope. But then also, if you hear, you know, film directors talk about their films, there aren't very many classic brilliant films that aren't in the end about hope. So I think it's maybe that's just like intrinsic to making art in some ways, but I think now that I've sort of cottoned onto the fact that people kind of will listen to your songs through their own lens, I kind of hope people can find their own stories in my songs and feel like that those stories are valid, and that we're all kind of connected, like we all feel feelings the same way. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's a big part of what I hope people take away from the album. But in terms of like the shows, I want people to kind of dance out of the doors smiling, you know. So I put a lot of fun and showmanship into the live shows, because you don't want to kind of slink out the doors at the end of a show looking at your shoes wondering what your life is about. You want some pep in your step at the end of a live show. But I think I think a lot of the songs are about kind of feeling like you are more worthwhile because of everything that has happened to you, and that was the idea behind the album cover. There's the Japanese art of kintsugi, which is if something ceramic like a bowl breaks, it can be fixed using gold. Mm-hmm. And thereby, you know, making the thing more precious than it was before it was broken. And I think, you know, that was the kind of metaphor for a lot of the songs, was like, no matter what it is that you've been through, you know, it maybe you're having a more valid human experience because of those things. Almost like what we were saying at the beginning, like it's important to know what a dark day feels like to feel a really joyful one. And so I think that's kind of like, that's the kind of texture that flows through a lot of the songs. And also I happen to have played characters in the last couple of shows that I've done, and people kind of like, it's a curious fact that I played a show on Marvel's The Punisher. Mm-hmm. And also on this Netflix fantasy show called Shadow and Bone, both of which characters got pretty bad facial scarring in the second season, which is like a very curious thing to happen to you twice.
Yeah.
A lot of people would a few years ago when I was still on Twitter, they would write, if I had a penny for every time Ben Barnes got facial scarring in the second season of a show, I would have 2 pennies, but that's still a lot. And so I thought that, you know, I had this slight sort of nod to that by having facial scarring on the cover of my own album, because that's sort of like my version of it now, rather than someone else's.
I'm not sure if I should ask, because you've done so much, but the tour is now,
yes,
multiple movies, you've done stage. Is there anything else on the bucket list? Like, what's next? Is there, it more music,
I
more
mean,
acting?
There are new things all the time. I think I sung one of the songs on a sort of morning show the other day, which is something that was completely new for me. I think it is kind of important doing any kind of creative work to try and scare yourself a little bit.
Okay.
To like push yourself to try new things. Because I think most of the time, hopefully, you won't regret it. It didn't go very well, out of interest. Just curiously, it did.
But the particular one, show?
Yeah, it didn't.
So we have a rule that we don't generally ask people to sing first thing in the morning.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You know, like that is a very, there's a lot that goes into,
especially
that,
when they were still singing, you know, late last night.
Right. I mean, I'm sitting here drinking tea and I'm just talking.
Yes.
You know, this morning.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
We'll chalk that one up.
Yeah.
It's another thing we don't put on the bio.
Also, I don't know why people do this, but why bands sleep on buses that are moving overnight and then try and sing again? I don't recommend it. I've never tried to sleep on a moving vehicle really before. I mean, I guess I've nodded off in a car once or twice, not driving.
Right.
But trying to sleep on a bus is a fool's errand.
But your tour manager's here. We should,
I know,
let's not do that.
I know. I don't know how many. Well, I'm not driving. But how many hours I've slept in the last 3 weeks is definitely less than any other time in my life.
But these are fun. These are new experiences.
Exactly. No, I agree.
So we got movies. We got music. Who knows is kind of the answer. What the next thing that scares you,
yeah,
will be the next challenge you take on.
I've never done. I mean, there are definitely a few things I like to do. I've never done, you know, I've done sort of action stuff and drama stuff. I haven't really done like a rom-com type movie. I've never done, I did some musicals when I was a very young man, but I've never done like a Broadway show, which could combine different things, could be interesting. But, you know, the truth is, I still have such a like giddy kid-like approach and attitude to all of this stuff, that, you know, whenever I get a script sent in, whether it's like, you know, gunfighting action or whether it's like, you know, passionate kind of romantic story, like I get equally excited about stuff because I like watch a lot of shows and movies. And so just the idea that I still get to do that for a living and play those kind of characters is so thrilling. And now I have this sort of other arm of what I'm doing with the music side of things, that if I'm not working as an actor, I'm kind of writing songs or planning a tour or recording something or working with other people who are like deeply passionate about music as well. So, you know, I feel, I've certainly never felt like more grateful for where my life sits.
That's cool though, because I feel like if you're not still enjoying it, why are you doing it?
Yeah, I agree.
Like, it's one of those, and I tell people, and obviously this is very different, but I tell people that I don't have to do this, I get to do this.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, and absolutely. And I think that's more true with music than it has been for acting in my experience. I think on sets you often meet a lot of actors who are kind of, you know, you're desperate to get these jobs and you do all these auditions and through all the rejection, then you finally get a job, and by the second week, they're sort of whining that they have to be up so early to do this scene or I can't believe they didn't get it in that take or whatever. Whereas musicians are kind of like, let's just play it. Let's take it again from the top. Do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, a slightly different attitude. But, you know, I think there are obviously that's wildly stereotyping, because there are a lot of actors who love what they do,
sure,
every day. And I'm, you know, I'm certainly one of them, and I think yeah, so that's like wildly stereotyping, but it is a sort of slight difference that I've certainly seen.
Listen, if somebody watching is bothered by that, it's probably because you're the person that we were talking about. Like, most of the people are not going to be bothered that's by true. It because it doesn't that's apply true. To them.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you
yeah,
are, don't yeah. be the mad good ones at are sitting him there going, me.
Yeah, I still love what I do.
Yourself. Yeah. All right. So people can find you on tour, on yes. social media,
yes.
kind of follow the websites. That's the best way to know where you are next.
Yes, probably. Yeah, probably the posters are on the Instagram. By the time this comes out, we'll probably finish with the American leg of the tour. But if you're watching this from Europe, that might
Dude,
still be
global.
Time.
We're global.
And there'll be more. There'll be more shows.
We end every episode of The Pulse with the concept of use your voice for good. That's the theme of the show. So right. we ask everybody the same question. Okay. When you hear that phrase, use your voice for good, what does it mean to you?
Use your voice for good. I mean, I think it kind of encapsulates everything that we've really been kind of speaking about, especially if you're lucky enough to have some kind of platform where even if a handful of people will listen to what you have to say on a certain subject. And I think not only kind of like expressing kind of hopefulness and celebrating the very short and precious time that we have together on the planet, you know, kind of celebrating that through what you're doing and the way that you talk to people.
It's interesting because I don't, like most of the discussion we've had throughout the show,
yeah.
it seems like what you do, your music, your roles, your awareness yeah. falls into that category of yeah. trying to do it.
Yeah, that's
but
why
then
I find
sitting
it
there and defining that,
that's
it.
That's why I find it difficult, I think, to kind of encapsulate it in a sort of pithy single sentence that works, because I think it's like how I think everyone should try and live their lives, because you know, we're all sharing this space. You know, that's what we also do with music too, is we talk about sharing music, and it's like a good word. And you've tripped me a bit with that question, and I'm going to blame not sleeping on the bus.
Listen,
to not having
just
a good
end
answer
it with
to that.
What does the phrase use your voice for good mean to you?
It means everything.
Guys, thanks so much for listening to the Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast. Today with actor and musician and seemingly genuinely just good guy, Ben Barnes. You may know him from the Chronicles of Narnia or Westworld or any number of pretty well-known films and shows with pretty significant cult following. Those are just the roles, the Marvel series and things like that. Those are just the kind of roles he's gotten into. But it was interesting hearing from him the importance of expressing his own voice and his own message. And that's kind of what drove him on this tour he's on now and the release of his album. Hope you enjoyed it. Do me a favor. I ask you this all the time. Hit like, subscribe, follow, whatever the button is that pops up on your screen so that you'll get a notification every week when another episode of The Pulse comes out. You also can download the Fox Local app. All of our shows, literally hundreds, are available right there at your fingertips. Some really cool guests that I think that you will enjoy. And you can also hit me up on social media at Bill A. Fox 29. Thank you so much for listening. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you, whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.